as you heard Kim say, she'll jump in with any updates that, as they come about here throughout the Wintrust Business Lunch. And a good afternoon to everyone. Happy Friday. I'm John Hansen filling in for Steve Bertrand. We're hoping to get him back soon. I hear he's feeling better. As you all know, he went through some medical issues, but he'll be coming back here in the near future. And we're going to start off with the Wintrust Business Lunch. We're going to jump right into it on this hot and steamy day. Andrea Haynes from Blue Sky Innovation, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, sure thing.
I think the last thing that people want to think about on a hot, steamy day is going to a musical festival with thousands upon thousands of people. But we're in the season. Lollapalooza is what, next weekend?
Yep.
And I imagine one of the downfalls that happens, I think, to certainly a lot of people is when they lose something at one of these festivals. You're not wearing a ton of clothing, something drops on out. And, you know, if I lost my wallet at Lollapalooza, I would think it's gone. There's no chance it's coming back. Maybe not the case.
Yeah, so it still might be gone, but there might be an easier way at least to find out the answer to that question.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Chicago startup called Crowdfind, which is providing basically like an online lost and found. So you can go through the Lollapalooza website, if that's the festival that you're at, and scroll through items that are found and get a better idea of whether you have a chance of getting your item back.
So when people maybe find something on the ground, if they're a good Samaritan, they bring it to maybe a central location.
Yep.
And what do they do? How do they put it up on the site for people to find it?
Yeah, so there are still like tents, you know, places where you would turn it in and where you would go to talk to somebody. But now on the back end, instead of like literally they were using an Excel spreadsheet to document things. And obviously that's not super efficient when you're dealing with a huge festival with multiple, you know, information centers. Now they have basically an app on the back end. So they can more quickly log items that are found and more quickly connect you to your item that's lost.
And it's going to be a visual thing. Like you'll be able to scroll through and find that specific item and see, ah, that's mine. Almost
exactly.
Like Instagram.
An Instagram type of feed. Exactly.
And then you reach out to them. That's a really cool idea. I do wonder how you prove it when you get there. I guess obviously an ID would have your driver's license in it or something along those lines. But a cell phone, I imagine there's something on their end that they look into it.
You know, safeguards so that you can't like shop the lost the lost stuff.
Well,
like
this stuff looks great.
And like yeah.
Yeah, it's a really cool thing, and people are, if they do happen to lose something at Lollapalooza or one of these festivals, just go to the website of the festival, they'll help you out, right?
Exactly.
And they'll be able to go through there. Okay, speaking of Music Fest, this story has completely caught my eye, mainly because on the website, it has a picture of a giant inflatable thing that someone's laying in at a festival. What are these gadgets that people bring to music festivals
now? So we had an editor at Pitchfork last weekend who came in with, like, feet that were killing him, and he was like, all I wanted in life was one of those, because he was seeing people with them.
So let's take a look.
Yeah,
inflatables. Okay.
It's almost like a giant, I don't know, it looks like it's inflatable, but it actually just inflates using the air. So you kind of swipe it through the air in order to fill it with air.
Really?
So it makes it a little more portable versus having to get out your little, you know,
pump.
Air pump. And yeah, and it creates a very cushy landing place.
So that got you guys looking at some different gadgets that people bring to these festivals.
Yeah, everything from coffee makers to like one of the things that we thought was cool was a nanotech t-shirt, which resists stains. So when you're spilling things, it literally just rolls off. So there's some cool things.
So when you have two beers, one in each hand, maybe one in your mouth that you're kind of balanced. I've never done this before. I'm not saying that I've ever done this at a music festival, but if a little bit were to happen to get on you, you'd be okay.
You'll look a little sharper by nighttime than you might have before.
Can I bring these to the Cubs games?
You know, we actually put a line in there saying check the rules, because I'm sure a lot of this cool stuff you can't. I think a t-shirt to a Cubs game would work.
Well, that'd be fine, yeah. But
work.
I'm not going to be bringing an inflatable couch,
yeah.
Certainly. What's this portable coffee grinder? That's one of the things that
I know. Well, we're obsessed with coffee, so we're pretty excited about that. And that one maybe is for your camping trip, if not, you know, if nothing else.
I was going to say, I love my French press coffee, but when I'm in the middle of Pitchfork last weekend or some festival coming up, I'm not going to be grinding my own coffee there. Cool stuff. Also, coffee, what a great transition. Starbucks, and you and I talked about this before we went on the air, they do this a lot where they find a local company that is doing some great things in terms of little food items to sell, and they feature them, and that's happening to a Chicago company, right?
Yeah, there's a company called Simple Squares that makes sort of, as the name would imply, a little square sort of nutrition bars that are mostly made of nuts and flavorings. So pretty healthy little bars. They cost $2 or $3, and they are out of 1871, the tech incubator here in Chicago. And Starbucks is featuring their products right now. So that's exciting, obviously, for a small company.
Have they said how they go about determining which ones to choose? I mean, I bet there's a litany of local businesses that would love this opportunity.
Yeah, they like things that are local with a good story behind them. You know, this has a woman founder. It's nutrition-based. It kind of fits in with the kind of products that Starbucks wants to offer. And now it's kind of up to customers if they gravitate toward them.
So they don't jump into bed completely, like sign a multi-year deal or we're going to move this amount of units. It's more, let's see how it goes.
Yeah, Starbucks is a little cagey. Like, they wouldn't exactly tell us, you know, how big is the test, how long will it last, some of the key things. So, but it's out there. And this product is in a number of other stores, so it seems to have some traction. I think it's more than 1,000 stores you can buy this in. So.
Interesting. And I imagine for that business, it's about brand awareness. If Starbucks has it, and you're going to grab it maybe with your latte or whatever you're getting there, you know, maybe you'll bypass Starbucks the next time and go directly to the company.
Definitely.
Interesting. Okay, so then this other app, we've talked about it before on the show, Spot Hero, which is interesting that you haven't used it because you work here downtown. You got a monthly pass. I've used Spot Hero. If you're not familiar with it, it's an app based out of Chicago, right, that helps you find parking spots for a discount, right?
Yeah, it's great. It's like anything. Apply it to the web, right? How can we better use the web to, like, find our, you know, unused parking spaces so you get a better price and you can book and pay for it in advance? So if you're coming downtown, you can, you know, obviously put in where you're going. You can see the options around where you are. You can see the price. You choose, you pay. So it makes it a little more seamless when you're, you know how it is when you're coming downtown. If you don't work down here and you're not super familiar with it and you're blindly trying to find a parking garage, it's not the most pleasant experience.
The really thing, because I used to use it all the time, that's really slick about it is it sends you, when you purchase it, you set the parameters of the time you want, and then it sends you like a little QR code, those little the barcodes that kind of look like a 3D barcode almost, or a two-dimensional one, and you just scan it, and that lets you know. It's like so easy, you don't even ever have to take out your credit card. Anyways, this is not just a commercial for Spot Hero, which I use all the time, but the good news is for them, they're expanding.
Yeah, so as a company, they've been in Chicago, which is where they started, and they've been in New York and Washington, some East Coast areas. But so now they're expanding to the West Coast. They acquired a San Francisco company, so they've had a little bit of a presence there, but they plan to go bigger on the West Coast. Los Angeles loves their cars, so we'll see how they do there. And they're also looking at Seattle and San Diego.
It's interesting that the app starts in the Midwest and it goes west. Usually with some of the tech stuff, we see it start in San Francisco and go east.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting. Andrea Haynes, great stories from Blue Sky Innovation.
Thanks. Great to see you.
Happy Friday, Chicago and Chicagoland. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. John Hanson in for Steve Bertrand. Okay, many of you may have had the day off, or you might have Monday off. It's summer. A lot of people taking half days. Imagine if you didn't have to file that with the company. It was unlimited. You could go whenever you want. Doesn't that sound amazing? Well, Adam Ockstein, the CEO of StratX, it not necessarily is. Some perks that sound great are not.
It's the mirage of an unlimited PTO perk, right?
Right. I mean, it just sounds incredible.
It sounds fantastic. Hey, I'll come to work when I want to come to work. I don't feel like going to work today. I'm a little bit tired, cranky, hungover.
Mm-hmm. So where are the pitfalls in it?
Pitfalls are in a lot of places. You know, first and foremost, most people are wired to want to get ahead, do a good job, go to work, you know, work my butt off and get ahead. So John hasn't taken off in a couple days, couple weeks, couple months. I'm racing against John against that promotion.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not taking any time off.
So
first pitfall, I think, is psychological.
Okay.
Second, and probably people don't even think about, is the labor law component of it, right? In Illinois, you have to pay out unused PTO.
Right.
Accrued unused PTO. So the minute you start putting, like, guidelines around it and say, you know what, it's unlimited, but the best practice might be 2-3 weeks, you got to pay that out, those whatever those guidelines are. So if you make it truly unlimited with no guidelines, one pitfall is the psychological component of, do I want to take any time off to get ahead? And then second one is you're entering a slippery slope of how much you have to pay out.
It's interesting that the pitfalls that you haven't listed, and I'm sure there are minor examples of this, are employees taking too much time off. And I talk with friends. I have a couple friends that work at Groupon. They have this policy. At least my friends do it in their positions. And they never take too much time off. It is that psychological, I'm worried about falling behind. And I imagine a lot of business owners see it the same way, that they don't see their employees taking too much time off.
No, and I think what makes the most sense, if you want to have a well thought out perk around that, is to say, come up, PTO should be a guideline, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is the acceptable amount of time you should be taking off. You know, there's 52 weeks a year. You know, 2-3 weeks of...
Four or five, six.
You know, how much time do I need to take off to actually recharge my engine and actually have a good work-life balance? And that should be your guiding principle. And then if you want to say that, you know what, John, it's been a weird year this year. Mm-hmm. You've worked your butt off on all these projects. take a couple extra days. That's the perk.
Well, I'm glad you've noticed, Adam, because it has been. Yeah, absolutely. I've been working hard. So, no, what I imagine with PTO, with most people like my company that I have, it's a matter of when you know that you have X amount in the bank, you use it and you don't feel guilty and no one chides you for it.
Right.
Exactly. Okay, so let's talk about some perks that that sound good and are good and do help retain employees. The student loan reimbursement. I've never heard of that as a perk. Is that a newer thing that people are starting to offer?
It is a newer thing, but here's where I would look at perks. I take a step back rather than talk about specific ones, and let's talk about what constitutes a good perk. And the first thing is you have to understand your employee base. So that sounds like a great perk. Mm-hmm. If I'm at Groupon and my average employee is 26, 27, 8 years old, and they have all this student debt that they have to deal with, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what if my workforce is in their 50s? Is that going to be a perk that's going to fall on deaf ears?
Mm-hmm.
Or if I offer, I'm going to cover family coverage, 80% of family coverage on the premium, but my workforce is 26 years old and single, that's a perk that's not going to benefit my employee base either. If I say, guess what? You don't have to commute to the office. You can work from home. But I live in the city 3 blocks from the office. Is that a good perk?
Right. I imagine that the challenge for a lot of businesses are when they have employees that run the gamut of all these ages trying to come up with a benefit package that has a little bit for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, but you're going to find most cultures are going to gear towards an employee. I'm not going to say you're not going to have an employee group that's going to have a mixture of millennials and people coming nearing retirement.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, your workforce is going to age, and as your workforce ages, so are their needs around their perks.
I find it interesting that benefits take on such a stronger role. I mean, millennials change jobs, it seems like, all the time now. Do you think companies need to do a better job of using benefits to keep people there longer? Like if they do have a lot of younger workers, student loan reimbursements, these wellness programs, are benefits a really attractive way to keep people, if necessary, if your wages can't go up all that much?
Right. I mean, there's going to be a practical point where you can't, increase wages too much. And there's going to be stuff that's automatically a check in the box. Like, I'm going to offer you some type of healthcare coverage. So companies are getting more creative as there is a war for talent to give perks that actually want to make people take the job and stay there. To me, the perks should be aligned with your culture. And most importantly, whether it's the HR department, the CEO, the executive team, looking at your workforce and getting a true understanding of what is a perk for them. And what's this kind of like, they rolled this thing out, no one's really going to like it.
The most polarizing one I see on the list that we're talking about is bringing your pet to work. I imagine some people think that idea is fantastic, and the rest of us think it's a terrible idea.
I forgot whether it was New York Magazine or Chicago Magazine. I read the article recently about, an anonymous article by a girl talking about a pet coming to work, and the dog ends up pooping on the floor next to, and then, eating scraps on the floor. Some people are allergic to dogs.
Right.
So, it becomes completely, the dog's cute. It's a cute little dog, but I'm going to bring my Doberman to the office, and it's going to sit on my feet, and I can't move, right?
And who's going to have to clean that up, right?
Exactly. You know,
we have enough of a problem with that. Adam Oxstein, thank you so much for joining us here, the CEO of StraightX. So I guess my final question, I wanted to say this also when we were talking about PTO. No matter how much we talk about how bad unlimited PTO is, I guarantee 75% of the listeners are rolling their eyes at us right now.
No doubt.
They'd love it, absolutely. All right, Adam, thanks for joining us.
Happy Friday.
We'll be right back with the news here on the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks, Kim. And Kim Gordon will break in with any breaking news as needed of the situation in Germany, of course. We're going to move on now, even though it's hard to do so sometimes when these situations happen. But let's talk about a really interesting, cool, I can't describe it in any other words than interesting and cool. So we're going to walk us into this a little bit. If you're walking through the Westtown neighborhood in Chicago, it's a very industrial spot. So it would be very unusual to see fig trees, apple trees, and pear trees growing in that industrial part of town. And what's even stranger is that these trees have taken root in 8 inches of soil on the top of a warehouse 15 feet off the ground. Janet Fuller wrote those words for DNA Info. She first introduced me to this story. And Molly Meyer from The Roof Drop. Trees on the roof, huh?
It sounds so crazy.
It does.
It's growing in the West Loop.
Yeah, so what is this all about? Is it just a specific roof? Are there multiple roofs? Talk about your company and the business model that you have.
Definitely, yes. So we have two companies. One's called Omni Ecosystems, and the other is The Roof Crop. So Omni Ecosystems creates green roofs all over the city, and in fact, the Midwest. We have a bunch of roofs in Indianapolis. We've done work in Detroit and up in Milwaukee. In Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
But the roof crop, and then the roof crop farms these.
Okay.
So once they're installed, the roof crop will come in and carry out maintenance for the entire life of the roof, as long as that as those plants are growing up there, farming the system. So we're taking kale, raspberries, strawberries, tomatoes, and even as you said, apple trees soon.
It's incredible. So let's go back to the first part just for one second. The Omni ecosystem, the installation on this roof. Who would be a great client for this? Is it someone with a big warehouse? Can anyone with a big roof do it? An apartment building, condo building? What sort of buildings are you looking for?
Yeah, so we've done this in all sizes and types of buildings, from residential to commercial and institutional, as small as, I think our smallest installation was 100 square feet.
Wow.
Up to, we've done over a half acre.
So is it just like you just open up a pile of dirt and pour it on the roof and put in some trees? I imagine it's more technical than that.
Slightly more technical, yeah. But when it gets down to it, it's soil, it's irrigation, and it's protecting the roof. Because first and foremost, you want that roof to be waterproof and
yeah,
stay watertight.
That seems important, especially with plants on it. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. And then we add the irrigation so things can thrive. And then the soil is actually very lightweight. It's actually an engineered growing media. So it's about a quarter of the weight of typical soil on the ground, so
okay,
that the structure of a building can support it.
I think it's interesting because when I think of green roofs, I often think of grass and succulents and things that are just kind of overgrown. But you're talking about plants that you guys obviously will then maintain with the roof crop, right?
Exactly. And that's, I think, part of our core purpose and our vision behind this is how can we create landscapes and greenery in buildings and on buildings, around buildings, that are inviting and usable and accessible to people.
So how much, I got to ask, I mean, this is probably the first question that people have. This sounds incredibly expensive to install this on the roof. What is it compared to if you redid your roof at home? I mean, is it 200%, 300%? What is it? What's the comparison?
Sure. So a typical new roof is probably, let's say, $10 a square foot.
Okay.
And adding on a green roof is probably around $20 a square foot. So you're tripling your cost, mm-hmm, I guess, right there. But in Chicago, commercial green roofs over 10,000 square feet are required to have, for new construction, pardon me, are required to have green roofs.
Really?
Yeah. So what that means is all green roofs cost about that much.
Okay.
So with this system, you can essentially have free maintenance for the life of the roof and create all this cool food to eat.
Right. So if you're in a new building, you're going to have to get a green roof anyways. This is just makes sense. And this is also then the interesting part is for also the roof crop. Then you maintain it, and then you lease it from them, right? So you can pay an owner to harvest their roof for them.
Exactly. Yeah. So it becomes another tenant on the building, or like a revenue generating new space.
Do people get excited about that? Because not only for the cost purposes, it might bring down their costs in the long run because they're able to make a little bit of money, but also just knowing that the things on their roof are helping to feed our population. That's got to make people, certain clients, really excited.
I think certain clients really jive with that. And some of them do it, frankly, just for the financial reasons.
Really?
And that's fine too. But the ones who see the bigger picture are really excited about some of the other things that we're doing. For example, there's three nonprofits in the building that we have in the West Loop. And right now there's 30 high school students through the After School Matters and Summer Youth Employment Programs going through internships and learning about green building, green roofs, and living infrastructure. And they're helping on our rooftops and farming it. And now these kids, they can't imagine rooftops that aren't utilized.
It's so funny because I imagine that this has changed a lot quickly. I think maybe 20 years ago, 10 years ago even, people looked at this as such a hippy-dippy thing. But it's a really practical thing, and it's really not that far of an out there idea. Like you say, this is Chicago law now. At a certain size, you need a green roof.
Exactly, yeah, and it's funny that you use the word hippy-dippy because I think it's becoming mainstream. And what's so cool, too, is that the students who were involved, the next generation, another 10 years, hippy-dippy is going to be,
right,
like, they won't even know what that word means.
Yeah,
you know?
The kids will pick it up just like every new app and everything else they do. How many, can you put into context how many roofs you guys have here in Chicago or all over the place? I mean, is it growing quickly? Is it exponential? Growing? How is your business revenue growing?
Yeah, we're growing on an exponential level right now. So we've tripled in size since last year.
Mm-hmm.
And the years prior to that, it was a consistent almost doubling. So that that curve is getting logarithmic for us.
When I think about the trees on the roof, as I mentioned at the beginning of Janet's story, the one number that really sticks out is 8 inches. That's all it takes, is that much soil to grow a giant tree. I just picture root systems that stretch deep, far, and wide, and you're able, with this technology, to do it in such a small, shallow space.
It's so true. And plants adapt. They're amazing at finding ways to live. And if you were to dig up a tree in the ground, most of the roots go laterally. So we're just giving them slightly less space, and they're finding a way to do it.
Right. And they don't go into the roof then? I mean, obviously the roof protects itself from the roots.
Right.
And the water.
Correct.
Okay.
We add a root barrier so they can't get in there.
Absolutely. Molly Meyer from The Roof Crop. Where can people find out more information about this?
OmniEcosystems.com and TheRoofCrop.com.
That's really cool. Thanks for sharing that with us.
Thanks, John.
I got to ask, as I teased what's coming ahead after the break, do you have any pets or no?
I do.
Okay. So when you got, is it a dog or a cat?
A dog.
Okay. So when you got a dog, you know, when you get a new dog, it's really expensive, right? It's not only the dog, you got to do all the veterinary stuff and all the stuff to buy along with the dog, right? Well, what if I told you, Molly, there's a way to save a lot of money in that process? You'd keep on listening through the break, right? Right?
Absolutely.
All right. Wintrust Business Lunch will be back with that right after this on 720 WGN. Hey, Orion. It's Friday, a hot Friday, and you're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm John Hansen in for Steve Bertrand. Okay, so if you're looking to get a pet, a dog, or you already have one, you know it can be one of the most expensive things. Not only getting the dog, doing all the vet shots, but buying all the stuff that you need to have a pet, to be a responsible pet owner. The collar, the cages, all that sort of stuff. Well, it can be really an expensive affair. Lauren Hoffing is with Retails on the Northwest Side. Lauren, I love the name, RE-Tails, as to, you know, like a dog tail. Tell us about your business. How'd you come up with, first of all, why don't you tell us how people can save money with your business?
Well, our business is a resale consignment shop, mm-hmm. based on pet supplies that people either never used or gently used, and just like consignment shops for other things,
clothing,
like furniture
or, yeah.
and clothing. We came up with the idea of doing it for pet supplies.
It seems like such a simple idea, but like I can't think of other places that do this.
As far as I know, we're the only one.
Wow.
But it's just, you know, a way to save money. Getting a new pet is wonderful, but it quickly adds up to a lot of money.
So how did you come up with the idea for the store? Was it going through an experience of having to spend a lot of money for your pet?
Yes, that's exactly it. We got a new dog, and we ended up with 2 crates and toys and dog beds, and it was just an investment. It is an investment to get a dog, or any animal for that matter. And after a while, realized we didn't necessarily need or use all of the items, and they were still in great condition.
So it's interesting that I came at it from the angle of that you can save money when you get a new pet, or you're buying stuff for your older pet. But you also come at it from the angle, and that is very true, that whether it's something unfortunate, like maybe the dog passes away a little earlier, or it's just you buy a lot of stuff for your new toy, your new dog, your new pet, and you just don't need it all. And it's nice to have a place where you can at least make a little bit of that money back.
Absolutely. We also get items that are marked down from retail shops that didn't sell, or even some rescues and shelters we partner with that get things donated to them that they can't use, and they turn it over to us and we sell it and give cash back so that they can buy some things that they do need.
So right now you're in a brick and mortar in the Jefferson Park neighborhood, just off one of the Blue Line stops. You're going to be there for another month. You're soon going to be getting a transition more to more online and mobile stuff. In the brick and mortar experience, I imagine that's been a valuable part of your business, at least in the onset, people first finding out what it is. But then do people say, like, oh my gosh, thank goodness this sort of place exists?
Yeah, I think it's like one of those hidden gem things that once people find out about it, we've been really well received. But going a little bit more mobile, we're taking it because we've gotten a lot of, oh, I wish you were in this area, mm-hmm. or people, surprisingly to me, have traveled down to me. So it's been really nice.
I imagine one of the, and this may not have been why you opened it, and I don't know if people have told you this, but we look at pet ownership, and since it is so expensive, it can almost become something that people in, like, even the lower middle class, or some of the people that maybe don't have the benefits of a ton of extra money but still want the love of a pet, that can be a burden for them to even have a pet and not be able to get one. Have you seen people that have said, you know, without this sort of operation, I don't know if I'd be able to get a dog or a cat?
Yeah, I mean, situations change all the time, and people find themselves in, you know, one situation when they get the pet and then find themselves in a different situation. And it is nice to be able to have some place where, you know, maybe you do need a new leash and you walk in and you get it for a fraction of the cost.
And obviously you're not taking stuff that is completely worn down. Like if Fido chewed all the way through the leash, there's one little strand holding it together and they try and bring it to you, you're not going to sell that.
You will not find that at retail. But you will find a lot of things that are technically used or secondhand, let's say, that mm-hmm. still have their tags on them because they just were never used.
Still with the tags on.
A lot of things.
Wow. So, and I visited the store for the morning show I work for at WCIU, and I was amazed with some of the stuff because not only do you have the typical things, you got your crates, you got your collars, you had a lot of dress up things for dogs, which is if you're a dog owner that likes to dress up your pet, that's fine, but he can't be the same thing every Halloween. He needs a new costume. So if you have a Halloween costume for Spot that you want to pawn off on you, right, you'll take it?
Oh, absolutely. We've got quite a collection going. I can't wait for Halloween this year.
What's the strangest costume that you have? I mean, I remember going through them. I mean, you got like Superman, you've got Batman costumes. There's some goofy ones, right?
There
you've got this look of terror on your face, like there's something that you can't say.
No, nothing that I can't say. But there are some really cute, creative things. Like I've got an ice cream sundae one. I've got one where there's you put it on the dog and it looks like it has a jockey on its back. There's some really cute things.
And I imagine it's been a cool experience. You obviously love dogs. You have one on your own. And I should also mention, it's not just dogs. They have fish tanks and other things available at retails in the Jefferson Park neighborhood. It's probably a great experience just to meet a lot of the pups. I know that you like to take pictures of them and share them on social media.
I do. I love when the dogs come in, especially the new puppies, because they're just so, I mean, who doesn't love a new puppy?
Right.
But we've actually had people bring in cats and birds also to the store. Just
waltz on in with their parrot?
They do. I mean, people just love, you know, their animals, and why not?
Yeah. So what's, I told you, I teased you this before the break, but what is the strangest or maybe your favorite dog name? Because, I mean, everyone's getting really creative with these dog names. I remember when it used to just be very basic names, simple one-word names, but you've seen some different ones, right?
I have seen some different ones. And honestly, I think the funniest ones to me are the people that name their animals like people names. Like, there's a dog, Larry, that comes in all the time. She's just a big fan of comedy, and she wanted it after, like, you know, Larry, Curly, and Moe, and I love Larry, you know? It's just funny to me.
Larry the dog. That is interesting there. You don't see a lot of dog names, I guess, that are people. Like, if Gertrude came in, that'd be an interesting name for a poodle, right? I don't know.
Sure, Gertie.
Agnes.
Exactly. It would be fun.
Okay, so how can people find out more information? So for right now, for the next month, and you also do events, too, on some of the weekends, too. Why don't you talk about some of your coming events?
We do. Actually, this Sunday, we have a photo session going on at retails, and we still have a few slots available if anyone wants to get their pet. We will do dogs and cats and other animals, too. You can contact us at info@retailspetsupplies.com. There's a hyphen in between the R, you know, the E and the
mm-hmm.
P. R and the T,
yep.
Yeah, I'm also on Instagram @retails, and also on Facebook, Retails Pet Supplies.
And what's the address in Jefferson Park for the next month?
5514 West Lawrence Avenue.
Really cool stuff. Lauren, thanks for sharing it with us.
Thanks for having me.
And say hi to Larry the dog for me, okay?
Sure will.
We'll wrap things up at the Winter's Business Lunch right after this on 720 WGN.